In the past 7 years, there has been no class that is more important than the class today. This may be, beyond every other class, the class that changes our way, our consciousness, our attitudes, our purposes, our direction, and our activity. It is that kind of a class. And it concerns the third letter, which is the word of Christ Jesus to Christ John, the letter to the angel of Pergamos. Pergamos is a Greek word for the citadel. It also means united. It was the seat of learning of the time, the seat of the priesthood. And also, it is called here the seat of Satan. Pergamos, in our spiritual terminology, means divine consciousness individualized. Individual divine consciousness is Pergamos. And this is the word of the infinite to the Christ in you, to the consciousness of God in you. As if you were not even present in a false human consciousness, the word speaks directly past your false consciousness to the divine consciousness in you, hoping you will have an ear. And this letter is destined to change the direction of the world in which we live. It will do exactly that, for that is its purpose. It will not only change our consciousness, it will change the consciousness of the world. And you will see why. To the angel of the church in Pergamos write, "These things saith he which hath the sharp sword with two edges." The sharp sword has been identified previously as the two-edged sword of truth and spirit, or divine wisdom. And it has two edges because it either cuts away that which is not to be there and opens the door for you to enter into a higher realm. It dissolves unreality, that reality may be visible. It breaks down our concepts of matter, that we may understand the spiritual universe. You see, it has two edges. With one edge, it cuts away the barrier to your spiritual understanding, and with the other edge, it opens a way into spiritual progression. And he who hath this sword is Christ, the Son of God, in you. He who hath the two-edged sword, an infinite Father is speaking to Christ in you, to awaken you to the two-edged sword of your being, which can release you from that which is not into the experience of that which is. I know thy works and where thou dwellest, even where Satan's seat is. Now the works of consciousness are the full infinite potential of your being, your capacity as child of God is the fullness of the Father. But there is also a barrier, and it is here called Satan's seat. And you remember last week in the second letter, in order to realize our own individual divinity, we were told we had to overcome the barrier of the five-sense world. Now that five-sense capacity in you, which sees into the external world not made by the Father, is called Satan's seat. And this five-sense incapacity to know the Father aright of the sense mind is the barrier to the works of your full potential being, experienced, realized, and manifest in the flesh. I know thy works, thy capacities, thy potential, who you are, for I am the infinite Father, and I am speaking to the Father within you, called the child of God, the Son of God, the Christ of God. I know your purpose, for you are my son. But I also know that you have to be released through that barrier which is the five-sense mind of man called Satan's seat. And the purpose of this inner conversation is to awaken the false human consciousness that it is dead to Christ within, barricaded by its own belief in the reality of the senses and in the reality of what the senses report. And thou holdest fast my name, and hast not denied my faith, in spite of the fact that your five-sense consciousness is unaware of the Father within and concentrates on the world outside. The Father within, the living Christ of your being, is ever faithful, ever there, never departing from your being. We are being told here that divine consciousness has individualized itself as your individual divine consciousness, and it is there awaiting your awareness that the five senses have separated you from the reality of being, the immortality of yourself, the eternality of yourself, the abundance of yourself, the harmony and beauty and perfection of yourself. All this is being said by, and thou hast held fast. Always your divine consciousness individualized is there, holding fast, meaning maintaining the perfection of your true being in spite of the appearances of the false senses. I can never leave thee or forsake thee. All that I have is thine. And no matter how critical the appearance, no matter how lacking or limited you may appear to be, no matter how painful a situation or condition may seem to be, I, your true self, am here, can never leave thee or forsake thee. I am holding fast. I am the eternal in you, which is totally independent of all the sense impressions that have misled you into the belief that you are alone, without help, defenseless. None of that is true, for I am here now. This is the revelation at this point. Even in those days, thou held fast my name, wherein Antipas was my faithful martyr, who was slain among you where Satan dwelleth. Now, it is necessary, in order for this third letter to do its job among us, to reach out into the world, to cut away the barriers of sense perception, it is necessary for us to take about 10 minutes to properly identify Antipas in such a way that we can see the purpose of the third letter more clearly than any church on the face of the globe. Now you recall that Antipas, who is called here my faithful martyr, is actually not a slave who became a martyr in the days of the martyrdom, is not the pastor of the church in Pergamos, as one commentator has suggested. As a matter of fact, it's rather funny how each of the leading theologians have directly bypassed who Antipas might be, when at the same time leading authorities know of an Antipas but have never connected the two to be the same one. And when you connect the two to be the same one, you have a challenge. In Matthew 2, we are told as follows. Now, when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, there came wise men from the east to Jerusalem. Now, the birth of Jesus is identified as occurring in the days of Herod the king. And it is commonly accepted that Herod, as the Bible tells us, received word about this birth from the three wise men, who had told him this would be the king of the Jews. And Herod, being the tax collector, the tetrarch of the area, the man who grew rich on the tithes of the Jews to Rome, quickly that prophet sense arose in him, and he could see that here was a challenge to his income. And so he inquired in his most friendly manner, "And where would this child be born? I should like to know, because I would like to worship him." Nothing was further from his mind than the desire to worship this child. And only 6 verses later, approximately, he gives the order to kill every child of the age of 2 or under in Bethlehem, when he discovers that's where Jesus was born. Now, you must see the symbology of this, because the revelation of truth begins at this point. At your birth, your own birth, this is what's being discussed here. The 5 senses of man did not identify you as the Christ. Herod did not identify Jesus as the Christ. Herod represents the highest pinnacle of sense gratification known to man, the 5-sense hypnosis of the world. Turns away from the Christ within itself and seeks to murder every possible idea that can contribute to the realization of divinity within, so that every child of 2 and under is killed. So with you and I, as we come into form, all that we are is unknown to the sense mind. Instead, we are known as the 5-sense creature of form, the physical body. We are dead to the light of God within ourselves. We are dead to Christ. Herod has done his work in us. Fortunately, Spirit visits Joseph before the killing of every child in Bethlehem under 2, and Joseph and Mary go with the child down to Egypt. Christ is cast out. As Christ is cast out in the birth of every child on this earth, when there is no parent there to witness the truth of being, that this is divine life appearing to mortal sense as form. And shortly thereafter, Herod is dead. Now Jesus and his mother and father come back. But they don't stop in a certain town where they would have liked to, because the son of Herod is in that city. Let's see if we can find this. Now they return. He arose and took the young child and his mother and came into the land of Israel. This is Joseph. When Herod was dead, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt, saying, Arise, take the young child and his mother, and go into the land of Israel. For they are dead which sought the young child's life. Whenever you see that name, the land of Israel, it's not speaking of a physical land. Israel means divine wisdom, illumination, Christ awareness. Go into the land of Christ consciousness. For they are dead which sought the young child's life. Now that the sense mind has been defeated, Christ is risen in Joseph and in Mary and in the child. And he arose and took the young child and his mother and came into the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus did reign in Judea, in the room of his father Herod, he was afraid to go thither. And notwithstanding being warned of God in a dream, he turned aside into the parts of Galilee. And so they went to Galilee instead. That's how they came into Galilee, because Herod's son was ruling in Judea. But you will discover that there was another son of Herod ruling in Galilee, and his name was Antipas. Herod Antipas. Now along comes John the Baptist. And John represents that consciousness in man which, having escaped from Herod the Great, from the five senses, is now repenting, trying to come into the awareness of the Christ. This is the repentant midway consciousness of man, called John the Baptist, trying to understand its truth, its reality, moving out of the wilderness, but not there yet. And what happens to John the Baptist? He is beheaded. And who beheads him? Our friend Herod Antipas. Herod Antipas first murders his own brother, Philip, who is the third brother. When Herod the Great dies, he divides his kingdom into three. This Archelaus, Philip, and Herod Antipas. Now Antipas quickly disposes of his own brother so that he can marry his brother's wife. This is sense gratification, similar to the father's. Just like father Herod the Great, now Herod the son, Antipas, is exhibiting the same indifference to the Christ. Now he marries his brother's sister, having murdered his brother. And she demands the head of John the Baptist for standing up and accusing him of murder in his brother's case. And he does behead John the Baptist. Again, the sense mind fights off the repentant self, which is trying to find its Christ self. So it is in us, at a certain level of our being, the sense mind is trying to stifle every quality and tendency in us to reach the higher level of Christ awareness. Now, just to be sure that Herod Antipas is the man who beheads John the Baptist, we have certain documentations here. One of them, incidentally, was just given to us a week or two ago. Toynbee's book, The Crucible of Civilization. You'll find on page 214 in that book, we are told that Herod Antipas was the murderer of John the Baptist. John the Baptist was beheaded at the hands of Herod Antipas. So you see, Herod and Antipas now are definitely linked. This was a further confirmation of this other book by Henri Daniel Rowe. Now this chap has written some 70 books. He's also a 20th century encyclopedia editor-in-chief. That's the Encyclopedia of Catholicism. He has absolutely no desire to reveal that Antipas is my faithful martyr. He's revealing the fact that Herod Antipas is the man who beheaded John the Baptist. He sees no connection between the two, so he has no ulterior motive at all in revealing it. Herod Antipas was the one whom the gospel simply called Herod. It was he whom Jesus termed the fox, when the Pharisees, hoping to make him leave Galilee, told him that the Tetrarch wished to kill him. And isn't it strange that this Antipas, who wanted to kill him, who had already beheaded John the Baptist, was now referred to by Jesus as the fox? A rather unvengeful word, considering what he had murdered and whom he had murdered. So you can see there was no fear of him in Jesus. And then we say this is the same Herod Antipas that Pontius Pilate sent the accused Christ during his trial on the pretext that he was a Galilean. There's more to substantiate it, but you can just accept the fact that on pages 80 and 81 and 82 of this book, Daily Life in the Time of Jesus, there is conclusive, irrefutable evidence that Herod Antipas, the son of Herod the Great, who had sought to kill Jesus at birth, was now the one who had beheaded John the Baptist and who was now receiving from Pilate Jesus Christ, because Pilate was unwilling at this moment to make the decision to give the order for crucifixion. To wash his hands of the affair, he hit upon this scheme that played right into his hands. He discovered Jesus was a Galilean. You see, Joseph had taken Mary and Jesus into Galilee. And who was the tetrarch there? Herod Antipas. So now Jesus is given over to Herod Antipas so that he can make the decision. And Herod has Jesus dressed up in a purple king's robe, and they scoff him, they mock him, they jeer at him. Again, sense mind is blind to the invisible Christ within itself. So it is that we are being shown here the consciousness of the world, not of a man, mocking the inner Christ. And Herod, ever deceptive, still unwilling to personally crucify the Christ, turns Jesus back to Pilate. And then a very strange statement comes in here somewhere. After that, Herod and Pilate became good friends. You'll find it in the Acts. Herod and Pilate became good friends. And why? Because now we were seeing the spectacle of the power of Rome, the physical power represented by Pilate, which means physical might, the body. And Herod representing the sense mind. The sense mind and the body together, unaware of the Christ, are crucifying the Christ. And so you see why sense mind and body become good friends. One is born of the other. And together they become the two thieves on the cross, on either side of Jesus when he is buried. When he is crucified, rather. This is the symbol of sense, mind, and body, both unaware of the identity of true being. It is this same Herod Antipas who now personally, with his own sword, after the crucifixion, kills John's brother James. James, the brother of John, is killed by the sword of Herod Antipas. He also imprisons Peter. And then a very unusual statement is made. It is said that this Herod who is talking now is the voice of God. But he's really a man, not God, and they know it, and so they slay him. And that's the end of Herod Antipas. They realize he was playing God. Herod Antipas playing God is the symbol of the sense mind of man playing God. And so Herod Antipas is finished. After the crucifixion, suppose you were told that Hitler was a faithful martyr of God. That would be quite an amazing statement. But isn't it more amazing to hear now that Antipas, guilty of all these crimes, is the faithful martyr of God? We're not told that he was misguided. The word faithful is used. The only one beside him who is called the faithful martyr of God in the Bible that I know of is Stephen. Stephen, who was slain in the presence of Saul with Saul's consent, because Stephen was teaching about Christianity. There you could understand faithful martyr. And yet the same words are used here for he who turned on the Christ, turned him back to Pilate for sure crucifixion, murdered the brother of John, whose revelation this is, imprisoned Peter, beheaded John the Baptist, killed his own brother to marry his brother's wife. All of this, and he is the faithful martyr of God. Do you see why, when you look at this and accept it for exactly what it says, that you can understand why the churches have had to go by this Antipas all these years? How could they say that this Antipas was Herod Antipas and find out that the word faithful martyr meant that a murderer, the one responsible with Pilate for the crucifixion of Jesus Christ, is called God's faithful martyr? All religion would crumble. It would never dawn upon the religious mind that this was that Antipas. But it is. And therefore, what does it mean? It means that Herod Antipas didn't kill anybody. It means that nobody was crucified. It means that the crucifixion of Jesus Christ is not what it has appeared to be to the world. It means that it is the symbol of the hypnosis of the world. In our ignorance, we have believed it is possible for the Son of God to be crucified. We have believed that there was a place where God did not exist, where murder could take place. We have, in our human vanity, believed that God could actually be an accomplice to the murder of his own Son. We have been wretchedly ignorant. Jesus was never crucified. And that is why the third letter will be the turning point of the consciousness of the world. What did happen? Well, Shakespeare told us what happened. He said, all the world's a stage. And so it is. Our faithful martyr was an actor. And who was Jesus? An image. creature's mind. We have learned that God is omnipresent. Do you not see that the murder of Jesus is the denial of omnipresence? Clearly, we can see that if Jesus was murdered that day, then God was not present. But you cannot remove the presence of God. God was present. God is ever present. The hypnosis of the human mind is the belief that the image which we call body is a physical reality. And the revelation that day was that all that was present on the cross in Golgotha and appearing as the multitudes were mental images. Images and thought. This was the externalization of the consciousness of the world at that moment. The world then thought that God was absent, and the acceptance of the crucifixion was the belief in the absence of God. The world still thinks God is absent, and it still externalizes murder, hate, violence, because those qualities which were in the consciousness of the world in that day are still in the consciousness of the world. And the very same qualities revealed then as the crucifixion of Jesus are revealed today as the murders that we see in war, even as the pollution of our water. You see, every impurity in the human consciousness has to externalize in an impurity in human conditions. The Spirit is revealing that man has walked by and has done two other blunders beside the one. In addition to accepting a place where God's power did not exist and accepting the second power, which could crucify, man has then turned around and in his ignorance of the fact that there is no death possible in the presence of God, who is present everywhere, in his hypnosis, man now turns and says, not only did God become an accomplice to the crucifixion of Jesus, of his own son, but he did it for our good. He did it. He sacrificed his son to relieve us of our sins. That's the second blunder. And then the third proceeds from that. And so, to this God, which murdered his own son, we pray. It's rather pathetic that a man who can devote his entire life to finding God can walk in the absolute opposite direction, all because the sense mind, the Herod mind, at birth slays the consciousness of truth in us, sends it down to Egypt. And then the son of that sense mind continues the onslaught, ever being willing to sacrifice the Christ within to the gratification of the senses without. This is the story of Herod and his son Herod Antipas, my faithful martyr. There was no Herod Antipas there, and there was no Jesus there. The omnipresence of God is all that was there. And the omnipresence of God is all that is here. And you will never see a higher degree of hypnosis than that belief on this earth. That hypnosis, removed, will do a miracle. That hypnosis removed will reveal that the Christ which walked the earth, appearing to human sense in the form of Jesus, having no such complex as the belief that human forms are divine creation and under divine law, could see them as they are, as not bodies, but images of bodies, and could know that this image of a body which appears crippled is not a cripple, but a crippled image. This hungry multitude does not consist of 5,000 hungry bodies, but of 5,000 images whose consciousness is out picturing their separation from the one divine consciousness. The complete world consciousness separated from the divine consciousness, living in a second self, a false state of consciousness, is crucifying the Christ of being. And that externalizes as the crucifixion of an image called Jesus. We're doing that within ourselves every day. The world consciousness is exposed there by the crucifixion as a consciousness separate and apart from the one divine consciousness. And so take this letter, saith he who hath the two-edged sword. Repair that separated consciousness. You are the divine consciousness. You are the divine consciousness individualized. You are the one self. And only your sense of separation crucifies the Christ within. We come to a place where we are receiving a command. And that command is to accept the crucifixion of Jesus as the activity of the false consciousness of the world externalized, thought externalized, revealing the consciousness of the world as separate and apart from the consciousness of God. And we are told to come forth and be separate from that consciousness. We can turn from the facts and we can think there was a body there named Jesus and that body was crucified. And the moment you do that, you are denying the presence of God there at the same time. Could God be present and a killing take place? And then you see a remarkable thing. The five senses of man saw the crucifixion. Who saw the resurrection? Only 500. 500 or so who had come into the five senses of spirit saw that no crucifixion had ever taken place. There needn't be a resurrection if there's no crucifixion. They saw that which could never be killed. They saw the spiritual body that was ever there. And the revelation then of the crucifixion of the image called Jesus is that the spiritual form ever there could not be crucified. And only the spiritual form was there. Only the spiritual form of Antipas was there. Only the spiritual form of Pilate was there. Only the spiritual form of the multitudes was there. There is not a physical body and a spiritual body. There are images. So we're being led to a new concept of body. God is not in the body of Jesus. If God were in the body of Jesus, could that body be crucified? No. And therefore, the body that was crucified, with God not in it, was not a divine creation. That which was not a divine creation was not created. It was an image in thought. The faithful martyr was an image, and the so-called victim was an image and the world of human bodies must now be seen as something else. You can learn that your physical body is but an image of your consciousness, and that it is your conscious concept about your spiritual body. Your spiritual body is all you have. You have a body, but this isn't it. You have a spiritual body. And this is the mental image you entertain about that spiritual body. That is why you had to learn you must rise above the five-sense world. In the five-sense world, you will ever identify the forms as physical forms. You must, because you are bonded to your senses and they are the creator of the physical forms. But the crucifixion teaches us that the only body present there was the spiritual body of Christ, which could not be crucified. And the murderer of that image is called my faithful martyr, which certainly tells you that we were seeing a cosmic teaching leading us to the next consciousness on this earth, the consciousness of my spiritual body, and the graduation from the false concept of body, which we have entertained as a physical thing. Even 200 years ago, it was revealed on Earth that the physical body is not physical at all. Science announced, correctly, that the physical body is not made of flesh, as we think of it, but of atoms. And they were right. The physical body is made of atoms. And what are they? How can you be atoms and also something else? If the physical body is atoms, that's what the physical body is. Atoms and flesh are not the same. Flesh is the appearance that the mind makes when it looks at atoms. And so we have these electrical charged bodies. That's all they are. And that's what an image is. And then we can come to another place where we see that these image bodies are a marvelous gift. You would never know yourself without them. Just think how fortunate we are and how loved we are, so that whenever there is something wrong in the experience of that body, we now see that wrong with our eyes, because there's an image out here called a body. Nothing can be hidden. We can quickly determine the cause, or at least the place where the wrong is. And we can find some realization in consciousness to release that wrong. If we were only spiritual form and had no imaged bodies out here, we would never know the nature of our own consciousness. And so now you have a different picture of yourself. You have the infinite consciousness of the Father, perfect in all ways. You have your human consciousness and it forming a concept about your invisible spiritual body, which is in the consciousness of God, which is your manifest spiritual form. This human consciousness forming your concept about that manifest invisible spiritual form outpictures an image called your physical body. Ultimately, you see, as the physical body, through its problems, forces you to make a change in your concept, each time your invisible body, your spiritual body, coming through your human consciousness, is reproduced inadequately in the image form, you have to make the adjustment. And ultimately, your human consciousness will be one, reaching into the infinite consciousness. And as it is one, the infinite consciousness and your individual consciousness become the one divine consciousness individualized, which then outpictures this form, this imaged body, in a greater degree of harmony. At present, this imaged body is under the dominion of the world, under the dominion of conditions external to you. You cannot control how this body will react in war, or to disease, or to the forces of nature. This imaged body is at their mercy. You have no dominion over it because it is the product of a false consciousness. But as that false consciousness is one with the infinite and becomes a true consciousness, the false consciousness dissolves. The infinite individualization of the divine in you takes dominion over that body until the point is reached where you are in that consciousness which makes this physical form out here independent of the world, immune to the world conditions. It has then served its purpose. The image has lifted your consciousness to the point where you have taken dominion over the physical form, over the physical image called body. And at that point, as this new dominion becomes a firm depth of consciousness in you, you find that the image is no longer necessary. It has served its purpose, and that was its purpose, to push you into higher and higher consciousness, into oneness with the Father, so that dominion over the form would now enable you to move through the experience called death in your spiritual body, sloughing off the imaged body, which had lifted you to the consciousness that could move out of mortality into immortality. All of this, part of the demonstration of the crucifixion of the form, the image called Jesus. The only one who knew it at the time was Jesus himself and John. Jesus had already died to that form. It is said in the early part of Matthew, let me see if I can find it because I think it's very important. We go to Luke. Second chapter of Luke, in the 42nd verse. After they had returned from Egypt, it is said here that when he was 12 years old, they went up to Jerusalem. Now there's a meaning. When Jesus goes up to Jerusalem, that means he's coming into Christ consciousness. When he was 12 years old. And the reason he could do it at the age of 12 when we couldn't is because Herod had been dead. The sense mind had been overcome. And so he could go up to Jerusalem at the age of 12. And there, because he had overcome the sense mind at that age, after 3 days they found him in the temple sitting in the midst of the doctors, both hearing them and asking questions. They were still in the sense mind. They were still under the control of Herod within themselves, but he was not. And what did he say to his parents? Wist ye not that I must be about my Father's business? At the age of 12, not being in the sense mind, he was about his Father's business. This is the same one who knew that he was not a physical form because he was out of the sense mind. Woman, what have I to do with thee? He later said to his mother. He knew he had not been laboriously formed in the womb. His name was Spirit. His body was Spirit. His father was Spirit. And he taught, "Call no man your father upon this earth. For only one is your Father which is in heaven. Your Father's name is Spirit." Then what is your form, physical or spiritual? Spirit. Then what is the physical form? There's nothing left for it to be but an image in thought. Cosmic thought externalizes as the image is called form. And as we step out of Herod, out of the five sense mind, even at the age of 12, you can know this spiritual form to be your reality and the physically imaged form to be nothing more than mortal mind externalized in the appearance of form. Science is halfway there, having now called it atoms. Now you might see this, that the spiritual form is all there is. The world concept of that spiritual form is made of invisible atoms. Invisible atoms are the invisible world concept about spirit. And so atoms are not only what science discovered, but atoms are the fabric of cosmic thought. And then in our sense mind, looking at that cosmic thought called atoms, we make the final reinterpretation of atoms into the image called matter. Two steps away from spiritual form. All of this must be faced, that I can never be an atomic form, I can never be a material form. This is part of the sense mind hypnotism. I am spirit, spiritual form. And all that the Father hath is mine, here and now, in spite of every appearance to the contrary. In my spiritual form, I am as eternal, as permanent, as indestructible, as Christ was revealed to be when the false form, the image, was crucified. If we were all to be killed today, it would be a myth. You cannot crucify, kill, hurt in any way the perfect spiritual self that you are. This is an inviolate divine law. Always the self of you is a permanent gift, a permanent dispensation of the Father. It is never hurt. It is never pained, it is never threatened, it is never in any way jeopardized, altered, or made defective. The immaculate self is ever immaculate. That immaculate self was the only self created by the Father and the only self present when the world saw a crucifixion. And it is equally the only self present today on this earth. There is no other. And instead of seeing crucifixions today, we are seeing other externalizations of the false world consciousness. You can learn to feel that these appearances around you are externalized thought without substance or law. And you can learn to walk through them in the realization that they are images in the world mind, images in your human mind, but you, in some degree, rising out of the belief in the testimony of the senses, can walk through these images. And you'll discover there is a way to do this, a way that we will discuss very shortly. Now let us find our center again. Hopefully some of you have never lost it. And let us try to let the Spirit itself redefine in us some of the things we have heard and some of the things we have thought, so that we can see that the crucifixion of Jesus, accepted in the consciousness of man as a reality, is actually atheism at its highest. It is a complete disbelief in the omnipotence of God. And you will see why the revelation of St. John had to be opened up so that the world could turn in consciousness into another level of being, free from the hypnosis, which is not only individual but worldwide, proving it individually as we go. There will be teeth put into these words in your own life.